very good day to you and welcome back to Marca's Eye on La Liga, the English-speaking Spanish football podcast that brings you all of the news and views from around the world of Spanish football. Delighted to say we've got fresh faces on the podcast, because to be honest, weren't we getting a little tired and miserable of all the same old voices? And delighted to say the First Lady of Marca in English joining us on the show, Miss Daniela Garcia Schultz joining us. Daniela, how are you doing today, mate?
Hey guys, very good. Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure, never a chore. And of course, we do have to add a little bit of experience to the rookie joining us on the show today. Delighted to say joining me once again, Mark Mayo. Mark, how you doing, mate?
I'm good. I'm happy to be the wise old experienced crusty face in this trio today.
The wise old experienced crusty face. I'm sure you're like 5 years younger than me, Mark, but I'll happily take the crusty face, particularly with my bald head as well. I'm showing my age at this point in my life. But we will forget all about youthful exuberance and old crusty faces and get down into everything that went on the weekend. We've got midweek games coming up as well in La Liga. Let's dive straight into the action, though. And Sunday night, a big victory for Real Madrid after a stumbling start to the season. We expect it to be difficult against Sociedad for Los Blancos, but able to come out with a good 3-1 victory on the road. 73 consecutive games scoring now for Los Blancos, and Gareth Bale particularly very vocal after the victory this weekend. Mark, I'll start with you, because we obviously hear players have come out quite a lot after big victories, important wins, and stating their case for, you know, how important it was, how good it is to win on the road. Gareth Bale, of course, has had some criticism in recent weeks, particularly after the stumble against Levante. But a little more outspoken than normal, the Welshman, perhaps. Just, do you think showing a little bit of the pressure that's been on his shoulders in the last few weeks?
Yeah, I definitely think there has been a lot of pressure on him. I think that's undeniable. If it's getting to him, I mean, it could well be getting to him. It could well be just how he is normally. But there's definitely been a sense that the onus is on him. He's the only surviving member of the BBC at the moment. He's the only player who has the total trust of Zidane. There's always that sense with Isco. Obviously, Borja Mayoral starting his first game of the season. It seemed like the onus was on him, and he knew as much as anyone that he had to score at Real Sociedad. And to be fair, I think the goal he did score was the perfect type of goal. It was a typical Bale goal.
Yeah, it was a wonderfully tasty strike from Bale. Daniela, in terms of the criticism that Bale has faced, do you think it's fair at all? I mean, he's an out-and-out winger at the end of the day, and the misses against Levante a few weeks ago were the kind of efforts that maybe you'd expect a proper, true number nine to put away. But something like him stepping into that role with Benzema out injured, it was always going to be tough.
If you can't make the goals that you need to, there's always younger guys waiting to take your turn. And I think that pressure definitely set on him in this match on Sunday. And thankfully, he performed really well for him.
He had some inexperience around him, and of course, Mayoral leading that forward line that had Bale and Asensio in it. It's very much suddenly a side that we've been praising for the amount of depth that it has, but it's just a touch thin in various areas around the pitch at the moment. I mean, Varane and Ramos are a fantastic back pairing, but after Varane was left out for quite a bit of the season last year and particularly used just as a backup at all times, it's interesting to see that depth is already being used so early on in the campaign.
Yeah, definitely. And thanks to Bale, he's quick. Borja Mayoral was in full force, but Bale was quick enough, and he was able to define that goal that he needed, especially after his renovation. People were waiting to see how he was going to do. And, I mean, good for him that he managed to get that goal in against Real Sociedad.
In terms of the 73 games now with goals being scored for Real Madrid, consecutive games being scored, Mark, I mean, Zidane's broken a few records already in his time. I mean, does anybody really care, though, that much about these? It almost seems kind of trivial. It's very impressive, of course, but at the end of the day, it is about scoring goals, but it's about winning games and winning La Liga titles and silverware rather than putting again a string of results like this that, you know, scoring goals in games is, as I say, always important, but they've had that stumbling start. You'd take a 1-0 victory as opposed to maybe a 2-2 draw or something like that, wouldn't you?
It does feel like a bit of a misnomer, this goal statistic. And obviously, the fact that no team has matched it since, Pelé's Santos in the 60s were the only team that have got onto that sort of level. It is a, you know, it's an incredible achievement. But there is a but with it. It's not, as you say, it's not a winning games. It's not an unbeaten season. It's not the sort of titles that we do look for. Real Madrid do have those titles in the bag. And I think because they have the titles, that makes these sort of records just a little bit trivial and just not so important. And I don't think that La Liga in itself is it's not a division that is renowned for its defence. I think if it happened with a Serie A team, perhaps, then we'd be saying, well, how have you done that? But with La Liga, it is a division that has a lot of goals. Real Madrid, you know, you look at their lineup, and I think some people would be saying, well, of course they're scoring that many games in a row. If they weren't, then that would be in itself a bit of a travesty almost.
What about for Real Sociedad this weekend? A lot was expected of them to be able to take the game to Real Madrid. It didn't really quite turn out that way in the end. A few kind of players underperforming in the heart of the pitch in particular. They weren't completely bulldozed over. I mean, they kept it tight for a fair bit, at least the first kind of half hour or so, but just outclassed in the end over the 90 minutes.
Yeah, definitely.
Go on, Dana.
Well, yeah, definitely. I think Kevin Rodriguez did well. He scored his third goal against Real Madrid, but then he scored a goal to his team. So I think that left him a little bit out of the zone and definitely hit Real Sociedad during the game.
Yeah, I agree. It was the second goal that killed Real Sociedad. They weren't really in it before the first goal, but in that sort of 15-minute period after Mayoral scored, they were definitely on top. They were definitely playing their best football. And in those games, I think because they are a team that is on the up, they haven't had many times this season that they've been in, you know, difficult, unlucky situations, and then they found themselves in one. They were against a far superior opponent, and they just couldn't deal with it.
Now, Real Madrid taking on Real Betis this week. Joaquim already saying, we will show no fear. Real Betis, of course, have an indifferent start to this campaign, and a lot expected of them after some of the amounts of money that they spent over the summer. With Real Madrid, though, getting back in the groove, I mean, coming out of the international break, you felt this was the time to be able to play Real Madrid and get something against them after the stumbles at the Bernabeu. But now, this seems like a convincing win that just sets them up nicely to start really getting down to business with this La Liga campaign. And Betis could really be on the end of something pretty disastrous in midweek this week.
It needs to be as well. If you look at Real Madrid's home form, it's been very poor. Real Betis's away form has also been very poor. So something has got to give. Someone's got to pull something out the bag here. Naturally, Real Madrid, you would think, I definitely have to say they're going to go for the win. They've actually, as you say, got, looking ahead now, they've got a really nice run of fixtures. Alaves, Espanyol, Getafe, Eibar, Girona, Las Palmas. Like, these are their next fixtures. They have slipped up in these sort of dodgy banana skin games already this season, but it'd be a huge shock if any of those teams took points off them. So going into the big games, they should be in a decent amount of form, and if Barcelona can maintain that gap to any extent in the next 5 to 6 weeks, then I think they'll be incredibly happy with that.
It's not been the most difficult start to the campaign for Real Madrid. I mean, you talk about they've got a nice run of games coming up. But Daniela, I mean, this was a league fixture list that we were expecting almost 100% record by the first 7, 8 games of the La Liga campaign already.
Yes, definitely. And I think here people were disappointed because a lot of games were ending in a tie for Real Madrid. And now they are fourth, and I think people were expecting a little bit more from Real Madrid, especially with the team that they have this year.
We'll see if Zidane can put it all together. He's got plenty of talent at his disposal this season. A side that's suddenly looking a little thin on the ground once again are Barcelona, the other big boys in La Liga, of course. A 2-1 win against Getafe this weekend. Denis Suarez and Paulinho with the goals after Barca fell behind. Shibasaki with the strike on 39 minutes to give Getafe the advantage. But Barca away, a victory's great, but losing Dembele for perhaps 3 to 4 months isn't, with a hamstring tear. The new boy coming in for big money this summer, late on in the transfer window, was meant to be the replacement, of course, for Neymar. It's a huge knock, Daniela, for Barcelona and their plans for the season.
Definitely. I feel a little bad for Barcelona because they had a summer of nightmares, and it seems like it's still going on, even though the season already started. And I also feel bad for Dembele because I feel like he's a player that was ready to give it all. There was a lot of talk during the transfer market about him. They really wanted him. They finally got him, you know, in the last few days. And now he's out for at least 3 or 4 months. I mean, he still hasn't scored a goal, and he won't be able to in at least 3 or 4 months. So we have to see how that works out. At least Paulinho got his first goal in, which is good for him.
I mean, that is a positive for Paulinho, getting his first goal for Barcelona. But with Dembele gone, the options are thin once again in terms of real quality to replace the winger. Deulofeu is probably the likely man to be the regular replacement for him. But what do you make of Deulofeu and his ability to fit in and dive straight into that role and have a similar impact that was expected of Dembele, Daniel?
Well, no, I think he still has a lot to prove. And I think they wanted Dembele so bad because they didn't trust Deulofeu still. I think he still needs to prove a lot to Barcelona.
Mark, you've seen, obviously, the Deulofeu on a couple of occasions, both in the UK and out in Spain as well. It was interesting, I thought, his reaction after the match, kind of getting a little chippy at the Getafe pitch, saying the pitch was poor and that was why Barcelona struggled at times. When there's a bit of pressure on you, we spoke about it with Bale, some people become quite outspoken, and this just seemed like quite a petty, childish thing to start complaining about. Everybody's playing on the same surface at the end of the day, 22 players on a pitch, and everyone's going to have to deal with the same problems. I know Barcelona love to play their flowing style of football, but again, it's just a slightly different, awkward reaction to look at on a Monday morning from a player that now is going to have a lot to do in this Barca side.
Well, Ter Stegen and Valverde also came out and said the pitch wasn't to their standards, but I mean, that's the point of playing away. You don't get to pick those sort of things. If Getafe didn't want to water the pitch for the last 3 weeks, they could have done that, you know. It's all perfectly above board. And Deulofeu, I mean, going forward, is he going to be the immediate replacement? I think he will start out as, but he has to score some goals or Valverde is going to think of other things to do. Paulinho might start becoming the first choice option at right wing, and I wouldn't begrudge that at the moment. He scored a fantastic goal on the weekend. The thing is with Deulofeu is we all know he's got that that quality. We all know that he's got the technique and he's got the vision, but has he got it over 90 minutes? Has he got the consistency? He's already had a couple of games, as we say, to start. Not really done too much. Again, the onus is on him, a lot of pressure, and that consistency, he's going to have to pull it out the bag because that is a long time period for Dembele to be out for.
Is there a chance that this injury just sends ripples in the chemistry and, I guess, the emotion in the Barcelona side at the moment? When it rains, it pours, is the saying, and it seems to have suddenly been pouring down on Barcelona for most of the summer with the big moves elsewhere, with Paris Saint-Germain, of course, in Europe, strengthening their side exponentially with the arrivals, and Barca just missing out on most of the players that they seem to be linked with to replace Neymar until they got Dembele. Haven't had the most convincing start to the season sometimes with the performances so far, and obviously a new manager as well, Valverde. There's a lot of uncertainty. Do you think going to emanate onto the pitch at some point?
No, I think they're a steamy bunch. I think they know how to win. They've been in these sort of situations before. Dembele had only just joined, remember. It's not like they've lost Messi. They've lost a player who had, you know, they've been hoping was going to be good and hasn't had the chance to yet. They're back to square one in a sense, but they've already won 4 out of 4, so I think they'll have a lot of confidence from that.
Sorry, Danielle, you wanted to add to that as well.
No, but I think Valverde still has options. There's still Denis Suarez, Alex Vidal, Rafinha and Arda are still injured, but maybe they could come in and, you know, do something for them. But I still think that Barcelona is a team that they know how to win. And definitely, like Mark said, it's not like they lost Messi. They lost a new player who still hasn't proven much and hasn't scored any goals. So I'm not saying that he's a bad player. I'm just saying that I don't think the team is going to feel the lack of him in their squad.
Okay. Just wait until after the Tuesday game against Eibar, once Messi picks up yet another just small knock that starts to aggravate his ankle slightly or something like that. We've seen him go down in the last few seasons just for short periods of time, but you wouldn't put it past that happening now with the luck that Barcelona are getting. Just finally on Barca, with talking about the depth and going to Eibar, Denis Suarez saying after the match that fringe players. It's time for them to show their quality, and they did that on the weekend in the victory against Getafe. Now, fringe players has been the thing that we've been quite critical of with Barca at this point in their squad, in their life cycle as a team, the fact that the depth isn't there. It still, on paper, doesn't look like that depth is there. How important is it that they have that Barcelona style?
Well, yeah, the thing is about the fringe squad is that it's very deliberately set up. It's very much so that they've got Delafeu, Denis Suarez, Carlos Alenia from the B team as well, all coming through. All of these players have come through the La Masia system. They're all very attuned to the way they play. Nelson Semedo seems to have started quite well. Also, Vidal's been there a number of years. Gomez, the less said, the better. Otherwise, I think they all know the game, and I think that's why they're at Barcelona. That's why they've been brought back to Barcelona, more importantly. And they, you know, the whole thing with the pitch just goes to show how much they provide that tactic above all else as the thing that they're looking for.
Now, Barca and Real Madrid were on the lips of the new Sevilla striker Muriel this weekend after their victory away at Girona, a side that are proving to be a little difficult, the new boys to La Liga, but Sevilla able to get the 1-0 victory. Muriel getting his first goal for the new side on 69 minutes. Interesting that he's been almost, I don't want to say overhyped, but he's come out basically and said, we're still going to fight for the La Liga title. Both Barca and Real Madrid, though, are always going to be favourites. Now, the headline that I've read, and I have to say it wasn't on marca.com/EN, where you can get some real reporting going on. I won't name who said this, but apparently Muriel says he wants title victory for Sevilla, which is just an overblown hype, of course. But Sevilla this season, just starting to put things together, getting the new striker off the mark with his first goal. And Muriel's looked impressive as well in the few starts that he's had so far this season in terms of a different option for that Sevilla attack. They've got plenty of wing support as well in Navas and Alito. The pace that Sevilla are able to play at is breakneck at times. What is the level, the ceiling on this Sevilla side for this season?
For Sevilla, I think third again will be an achievement if they can, or fourth, sorry, again, will be an achievement. Third will be an incredible achievement. If they can close the gap on Atletico Madrid, that'll be a sign of progress. I don't think they can expect too much more than that. At the end of the day, Baritzo, it's his first season. What I have noticed about them, that you talk about the attack has been improved slightly, but the defence only conceded one goal in their first four games. That's so much of a better situation than they were in with Sampaoli. It also has the signs of a team that isn't going to burn out after the first half of the season like they did last year. And if they can keep the gap, you know, Real Madrid, Barcelona, maybe like 9 or 7 points clear of them come Christmas. But if they can keep the gap with Atletico to 2-3 points, then they'll have real aspirations to get into the top three.
Go with Montoya and Sarabia supporting Muriel this weekend, but defensively behind, as you mentioned, Mark, there. Daniela, Steven and Zonzi had a little bit of that I want the big move away in perhaps the back end of last season, the second half of last season, certainly, and it felt like in August to start the La Liga campaign as well. But he's still at Sevilla, hasn't had his big move away, perhaps back to the Premier League, and looks like he's getting back down to business again as being an anchor, and a really important anchor in the heart of the pitch, particularly then with the distribution around him with Enner Benega, who's coming into his own after a rocky start being sent off in their opening game.
Well, yeah, I think Sevilla always starts the season really strong. This is their third successive league win this season, but somehow at the end they always manage to fall a bit behind. Right now they're third in the league. And I don't know, I think Muriel was very important in this game. It was the 69th minute where he scored his goal. And we have to see what happens to Sevilla for the rest of the season. They do have a new manager, so who knows?
What about Baresso getting to grips with a new side? It's always tough to come in after Sampaoli and Daniela. I mean, Baresso is a much calmer figure at times than Sampaoli. I think 90% of the people are that are down on a touchline in La Liga. But he's shown as well an ability to adapt, going with what many people are saying was a 4-3-3 this weekend. He's also gone with the 4-2-3-1 at times this season. It looks like he's got plenty of strings to his bow with this Sevilla side.
Yeah, I think that Burrito has brought a little bit of hope to Sevilla, and I think he knows his players well enough to know where to place them, depending them on who they're going against with. So I think it will be a good season for Sevilla. We have to see. San Paolo is now far away in Argentina, and he did really well, but I think he's bringing hope to the new Sevilla, so we have to see what happens with them.
Yeah, it is a long season, of course, but Sevilla, there will be some expectations just to kick on and add to what Sampaoli did in the last 12 months or so, at least getting that side firing and looking like they could take on the best in La Liga at times. I want to touch on, before we get on to Atletico Madrid and their victory against Malaga on the weekend with Griezmann back in the goals. Ludicrous. 80 days as a manager and he gets sacked. Albeit, Alaves haven't scored yet this season in their first four games. Haven't got a point yet this season in their first four games. And lost 3-0 on the weekend to Villarreal, which isn't actually that terrible a result when you consider how good Villarreal are traditionally defensively. But Luis Zubeldia sacked and the managerial merry-go-round starts. Is sacking season already upon us, Mark Mayer?
Very much so. It appears he's not the only one who's gone. Anderlecht, Crystal Palace, they're all triggering away now. Werder Bremen, I think, as well. So this is it. Four games now. I think we used to say like seven or eight was the minimum. Now it's four. So it's good to know that we're reaching zero soon. That'll be good.
I mean, I've had eating binges that have lasted longer than this 80 days kind of thing. You know, you put me in an all-you-can-eat Chinese buffet, I'll be there for 83 at least, I imagine. Daniel, this is getting ridiculous now in terms of being a manager. Why aren't players being criticised more? You can't put it just down to a manager if players are either ignoring or not doing what a manager wants. I mean, we don't know the ins and outs of Alaves, of course, at the moment, with Zubeldia's departure only happening in the last 24 hours or so, but there's got to be a balance of power in terms of players get all the credit when things go right, managers take all of the flack when it goes wrong.
I think it comes down to it's easier to shake a manager off than it is to shake players off. So when a team is under pressure, I think the easy way out is to sack the manager, and it comes down to that.
It just seems a little ludicrous.
I just think that the Alaves board must have listened to our sort of first podcast of the season, because I think both me and Simon both said that Alaves can be in a lot of trouble this year. They've seen the first four results and they've gone, well, you know, we've got the endorsement of the Marco English that we're going down, so we have to make a change.
Now, what you've done is you've got in the head of Luis Zubeldia, and by saying that, he's gone into the new season with this idea of, oh, not even the Marco and English guys believe that we can turn this round. Like, they know you've destroyed this manager. And and meant that after 80 days, he has been dismissed. The first sacking of the La Liga campaign, as I say.
Maybe that should be, we should have a weekly feature then, the Mark's character assassination of the week.
Yeah.
And then see how long that lasts.
Well, to be honest, Mark, I don't want to see managers getting sacked after 80 days. We should be praising them. We should, well, I tell you what, give me 10 seconds on why Zubeldia should be given a job in the next week, Mark.
Oh, well, I think there's as I said earlier, there's one at Anderlecht going, so Belgium has some nice pastries, so definitely get up there and knock on the door there.
Saying nothing about his ability as a manager, just going that Belgium's got some good pastries and missed out on the chocolate as well. That would have been a go-to for any sort of job in Belgium, for sure. All right, let's move away from that and get back to Atletico Madrid. A solid victory against Malaga. Griezmann on the score sheet after 61 minutes. And Simeone, though, is desperate for a proper strike partner for Griezmann. Is this ever going to happen? Obviously, the transfer ban in effect still at Atletico Madrid, why there's been no purchases this summer. But it's something they've been looking for a long time, somebody to partner Griezmann and get the best out of him and support him and perhaps mean that he's not carrying the weight of expectation of this Atleti side all on his shoulders in attack, Daniela. Who's going to be that man that can come in if they can't get Diego Costa?
Well, I think they're pretty set on getting Diego Costa, and I think they don't see another way out. We were there on Saturday outside the new stadium, the Wanda Metropolitano, and as we were interviewing people, they were saying, yeah, the new stadium is great, but we want Diego Costa. We won't be happy until we have Diego Costa. And, yeah, the fans were literally saying that. And he would be the most expensive player in the history of Atletico after Falcao, who was 45 million euros plus 7 in variables, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, I think the fans don't see any way around Diego Costa.
Great transfer knowledge bombs there. Yeah, set to be around about 65 million euros, the next bid for Diego Costa.
Plus 10.
Well, 55 plus 10, overall, yeah. 65. Is it the right way to go? Is it a little too one-dimensional being so focused on Diego Costa at the moment? And if he comes back, is it the same Diego Costa of old?
Well, he hasn't played in, I think, 98 days. So I don't even know if Diego Costa is in shape to play with Atletico de Madrid right now, let alone Chelsea. And I think they really should start looking for another option and stop listening to the fans so much. But I don't know. I think Diego Costa did it the completely wrong way. He's burning bridges all over. And I really don't know how that would work out for Atletico de Madrid.
You could never see somebody like Diego Costa burning bridges and getting all fiery off the pitch, could you? Not with the way he's so calm and cool and relaxed while playing on the pitch. What did you make of the new ground then, Daniela? Obviously, the Calderon's magic has now gone. Is it a little more corporate and stale down there, the new stadium?
Well, it's big. It's very, very, very pretty and modern. But fans were saying that they left their heart in Vicente Calderon, and they are excited. But people were saying, oh, yeah, it's very pretty, but it belongs to the Chinese. So there are a lot of mixed emotions about the new stadium. But I have to say it's a world-class stadium. It's very, very pretty. Chelsea will see it in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it may be world-class, but Mark, is it going to have that same intimidation factor? Did you get that feeling this weekend that it's still going to be as rowdy and noisy and lively as the Calderon was?
You know, I was a little bit worried when I saw the photos because it appears the seats and the tiers are very shallow, and I prefer a stadium where the fans are right on top of the pitch, like the Calderon had, like the Mestalla has as well. So in that respect, I was actually put a little bit at ease because it seemed like the atmosphere against Malaga was very good. What they need is they need some big memories. They need some big dramatic European nights. They need to get a good start and beat Barcelona or Real Madrid or Chelsea at the Wanda Metropolitano. And after that, I think they'll start to feel a little bit more at home.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting one if they can reignite that atmosphere. And, of course, a decent Champions League campaign would certainly bring back a bit of the rowdiness and liveliness and add a bit of early history into that new stadium. I always just worry though, if it's too plush, too clean, too pretty, too corporate. I like the old grounds. I like the fact that you can go to the Camp Nou in Barcelona and it feels like a big, dirty, horrible concrete bowl on the outside. But you know, inside, everything is going to be beautiful, pretty and smart in terms of the football on the pitch. And it's still got almost that old character about it rather than, you know, nice, perfectly polished, painted steel and glass everywhere and corporate boxes left, right and centre. Get rid of that. Get the rowdiness back into these football grounds around Europe. But I'm just a crusty old man, as Mark Mayer pointed out earlier at the start of the show. Right, let's look ahead to the games in midweek. Espanyol take on Celta de Vigo this evening. We'll skip away from that because by the time that we get this out, that game could be done and dusted. Valencia against Malaga, Barcelona against Eibar coming up on Tuesday. Most people will fancy watching Barcelona against Eibar. I know you and McTair will, of course. But Valencia against Malaga could be quite an interesting one with this positive start that Valencia have had this season.
They have made a positive start. They are playing well. They are just struggling to score goals at the moment. They just can't get it over the line. Only scored 4-4 at this stage of the season. Malaga, a good team for them to face at this moment because they have to, they have to get some points on the board. Malaga lost all their games, and I just feel that Valencia, they're moving in the right direction, which is good for them. A top eight finish is definitely on the horizon.
Yeah, it's something we haven't seen for a while with Valencia moving in the right direction. For Malaga, it's been a really poor start to the campaign, Daniela. I mean, it's got to start going right at some point because this isn't a side that we were expecting to be battling out in a relegation fight anytime soon this year. And no points on the board, as Mark says, 4 losses from 4 and only 1 goal scored, 6 conceded. It's not looking pretty at all.
Well, I think we have to wait until the next match that Malaga has, because this weekend was a bit of a special occasion. They were definitely outnumbered in terms of expectation when it comes to going against Atletico de Madrid in a new stadium in their own city. So let's not be too harsh on them and see what happens to them this week.
Urging a bit of patience. Daniela, I know you've got to shoot off and get back to the desk of Marca in English. So I really appreciate you taking the time out. We will bid goodbye to you for now, but I'm sure we'll get you back
so
on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure.
I'll see you next week.
Absolute pleasure. Cheers, Daniela. Daniela Garcia-Schultz joining
bye,
us
guys.
On the show. You can see her on Twitter at Daniela_GSC. That's Daniela, though, with just
That's
the
right.
one L. Just the one L.
I'll That's make... right. A little bit Latin, Daniela.
Cheers very
Bye
much.
Bye, guys.
Take care. Daniela joining us on the show, making her debut. Mark, let's go through the rest of the games that we're kind of keeping an eye out on then this weekend. This midweek even. On Wednesday night, Bilbao against Atletico Madrid should be a really tasty one.
Yeah, Bilbao, the perennially excellent at home and quite often awful away from home team, is, you know, making for a good fixture. Atletico obviously destroyed Las Palmas away from home. Otherwise, they've not really done too well. So I expect this will be quite a tight game. Bilbao are going to come into it off the back of relatively bad loss it was at Las Palmas. Let's face it, they weren't playing particularly well. Las Palmas aren't a great team to lose to in any sense. So it's going to be a tough one to bounce back from. But I expect back in San Mames, they'll have a good performance on them.
What about Villarreal against Espanyol on Thursday evening? Again, Villarreal, the side that helped, I guess, this weekend to get Luis Zubeldia sacked with the 3-0 victory over Alaves, who, as we've already mentioned on the podcast, have had a terrible start to the campaign. But for Espanyol, I really thought the first couple of games for Quique Sanchez Flores' side, they looked really well organised and quite decent going forward as well. And it's all just kind of gone off the boil and gone a bit wrong for them, despite what looked like a promising start, at least in terms of structure and organisation on the pitch. Only 1 point so far from, albeit their opening three games of the season.
The thing is with Espanyol is I think that Catalan derby sort of took the stuffing out of them. I don't think they expected to lose that by 5 goals, which they did. I think they're playing for Villarreal at the worst time possible. Villarreal, you know, they benefited from quite a lucky deflection against Alaves on the weekend, back in to get his first goal. But other than that, they were fine. They were back on form after two early losses in the campaign. I think they certainly weren't expecting, but it's kicked them into gear and they've started well in Europe. And I fully expect them to take the points off Espanyol.
Which is the game that you're kind of most looking forward to then this week, this midweek? Real Madrid against Betis is the other one that stands out quite a bit. Sevilla, Las Palmas, Leganes against Girona, the new boys. Girona, who have been a really tough nut to crack for some sides so far this campaign. Deportivo taking on Alaves. So, as I say, have Javier Caballero in charge temporarily for the moment. Celta de Vigo take on Getafe on Thursday. Levante take on Real Sociedad as well on Thursday night. I'd just like to point out, by the way, Mark, I'm trying a little more with my Spanish accent and twang on sorts of things, like Getafe rather than Getafe and stuff like that. I hope it's being appreciated by yourself, mate. But what's the games that are standing out for you elsewhere then around midweek?
Oh, well, on that topic, we're never going to beat Daniela, so I just relegate to having myself on the English accent, getting everything wrong. So I looking across the fixture list, I think Levante Sociedad has a good game in it. It might be quite low scoring, but Levante at home, they are proving very capable of rising back to La Liga level. Real Sociedad need a good result in them. If they lose that, then they're, you know, not looking good at all, are they? Leganes-Girona is a very interesting one. It's one we can speculate about a lot, but I, again, sense it's going to be quite low scoring. I can't really look past Madrid-Betis. I think that's going to be a really interesting game. If Betis get an early goal in that, then that's going to, you know, reignite the sort of alarm bells. It doesn't take much to get the alarm bells ringing at the Bernabeu at the best of times. They know they've drawn their last couple of games there. Betis have more than enough about them to cause Madrid some problems.
Yeah, particularly, as you say, 2 draws in 2 in the Bernabeu in La Liga for Real Madrid. The first time in over 20 years they haven't found a victory in their first two games on home soil in a league campaign, and it could be three in three without a victory if Betis can pull a little bit of an upset and pick up a point or better in the Bernabeu against a Real Madrid side, which you said earlier, slightly depleted in terms of their depth. Quick podcast today. We should be back, hopefully, on either Thursday or Friday to look back at some of the midweek action. We will keep you posted on that via Twitter. Of course, you can catch up with Mark on Twitter as well, @ThatMarkMayo on Twitter, all one word, no spaces. Daniela is @Daniela_GSC, G for gopher, S for sugar, C for cat, and it's Daniela with the one L, of course. I am @O_J_Wilson. I don't need any Twitter followers, though, thank you very much. I'm quite boring on social media, I have to say. Instead, you're better to go to @MarkerInEnglish, @MarkerInEnglish on Twitter for the latest breaking news from around the world of Spanish football, or even better, get onto the website, marker.com/en. That's marker.com/en. Go on Facebook, MarkerInEnglish. Just type that in the search engine on Facebook. You'll be able to find the page, like it, and you'll get updates on your homepage, on the social network. And, of course, get onto iTunes and Audio Boom. Search Eye on La Liga, and you'll be able to find the podcast. Like, review, rate it, and start giving Mark and Daniela a little bit of abuse as well for their predictions and points if you disagree with them. Not that I condone any sort of abuse on social media in any way, shape, or form. Maybe some gentle ribbing. Perhaps just have a shot.
Bring it on.
Have a shot at Mark for some Reading stuff as well. Who knows? And on that bombshell, we will leave it there for today. A big thank you once again to Daniela and Mark for joining us on the show. Mark, appreciate the time as always, mate.
No worries. Thanks, man.
And we will be back in a few days' time, or at least next week, after another thrilling week of La Liga action. It's all coming up in midweek, and then Saturday and Sunday as well on the weekend. So much La Liga football to keep your eye on. The only place to do it is get your eye on La Liga on this podcast. We'll be back in 7 days or less. See you soon. Have a good one.